And I never really start the podcast. I really just do something like, this is Unfuck the Poor, and I am Joe Love, and I'm here with my brother. Do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm David Love.
And what do you do? No, don't answer that.
I don't want to answer that.
Nope. This is a bonus episode of Unfuck the Poor. The bonus episode, No Father is Better Than One. And this is the bonus episode. We're going to add a little bit more context to the man who donated his sperm for our existence, because he was not much of a father, was he, David?
Nope. No. That sure is a gross way of putting that.
Well, the miracle of life is pretty gross.
Yep.
Yep.
Anyway.
So you're older than I am. Mm-hmm. You're 6 years older.
Yep.
You were born in 79.
Yep.
We have another special guest in the studio today. Mom, when did you marry Pete?
August 31st, 1978.
And then later, you had a bouncing baby boy named David. When was he born?
1979.
Hold on. That math ain't mathin', Mom.
It is what it is.
So you had a shotgun wedding. You had David.
It is what it is, Mom.
It is what it is. So, David, you grew up with this monster for 6 years before I entered the picture.
Oh, yeah.
What is your earliest memory of our father?
I remember living at the house on Spring Street for a little bit, the White House on Spring Street for a little bit, right? We lived there, and then I remember moving into the house on Academy. It's hard to say what my first memory of him. It's like a conglomeration of memories. Okay, one of them had to do with him playing Risk. They had a bunch of people from church, I think. One of the church friends that played the Risk, they would all come over, and Mom had a shirt that said, I hate Risk, because she didn't like Risk because it was
true,
long and tedious, I guess, the game.
Wait,
itself.
Where did you get a shirt that said, I hate Risk?
I think they made it for her.
They made it.
So it was that obvious. They're like, boy, she really doesn't like this game. Let's custom make her a t-shirt with markers.
So I messed this up on one of the first episodes. I could not remember what church we went to when I was a kid, when you and Pete were still married. It was Church of Christ, right?
It was Church of Christ.
So, spoiler alert, my mother is a pastor, and she knows all about the different brands of Jesus. And so I want to ask her real quick, Mom, can you clarify what Church of Christ is and what they believe and what they don't believe?
They believe that you should do whatever's in the Bible, but if it's not prescribed in the Bible, you don't do it. So they don't celebrate things like Christmas and Easter.
What about fun stuff like music or dancing?
I guess they like music, but they don't dance.
They don't play musical instruments in their churches.
That's right.
Because
a cappella.
It's all a cappella because musical instruments take away from their ability to give glory to God or something like that. Or it takes away from their God-given talent of their natural voice or some weird crap like that.
Is that true?
That would be accurate, yes.
Jesus. I do remember this from the Church of Christ. Behind the pulpit, there was a big bathtub.
Yep, it was a baptismal.
A baptismal pool.
Yeah, a cold one, I'm sure.
And after...
No.
But there was like... Wasn't there a glass wall in front of it?
A little bit, to keep it from splashing.
I do remember after the service, you could run all around the church, and there was a door where you could get into the pool, and we were definitely not allowed to get in there, but I definitely did. I really like touching the baptismal water.
Well, that's cool, but I imagine you couldn't get in there because it would have been dangerous.
Well, I like to think that I just like to splash in the glory of the Lord.
All right.
Okay, so...
I never let it touch my skin.
Yeah. So...
No, I just... No, I...
You were never baptized in the Church of Christ.
I was never baptized in the Church of Christ.
Do they baptize children in the Church of Christ?
They did. So I'll tell you this.
Not babies.
Not babies, not like that. No, you have to come forward. The thing is, you don't just get like go through confirmation and everything like that. You have to go forward to the church and don't you have to like talk a bunch of smack about yourself? But they didn't, they made it their business to know your business. So you'd come forward and confess your sins and like go through the whole thing about like what you needed to do before you were baptized, you're repenting and I don't know if they make you call out anything in particular for yourself, but the elders would ask you if there's anything that you need, nothing like that.
No, I think you're confusing two different things.
No, that was just coming forward at the end of the service.
Yes.
That's when you had to.
Young people might go forward to be baptized.
Curtis Herring, Curtis H. did it when I was a kid, and it made me not want to do it just because he was kind of a little self-righteous about it, even though we were like kids.
No, kids that reach the age of accountability, which isn't in the Bible, would go forward to be baptized in obedience to the gospel, but then older people who had been baptized and were supposed to be walking in the way of the Lord, if they committed some public sort of sin, they would go forward and confess, and the elders would pray for them so they would be forgiven.
But you also had to tell the entire congregation what you did too.
True.
Yeah. That always stuck in my
what?
Craw. Yeah.
Usually you would confess or you would tell the elders and the elders would tell the congregation.
Right. That's how it worked. But in your case, when you went up and told them about the divorce, it was funny because it was the old man. And he was like, there's something with the elders that I need to discuss. And he wouldn't say anything else about it. It was that, and he looked like, did she just murder somebody? Because that was the worst thing in the world for like, it was like the only thing inexcusable by that church. They hated divorce like crazy. It was the worst thing you could do.
Yeah.
And because your friend from high school went like completely like cut you off because you wouldn't take somebody back.
That's right.
And that was completely ridiculous to me. I remember she came to my window, just gave her this note, and I'm like, oh, this is not going to go well.
True.
But you know what? She, you know, her loss. So.
Yeah, because you're awesome.
Yep.
She actually called me the night before he was getting married the second time and told me I should take him back. And I said, well, even if I wanted to, he's getting remarried tomorrow.
I think that lady just missed playing Risk.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
I am so glad that I was too young to remember anything about this church. It sounds horrible.
Well, Westview was. And so was University Heights. It was the same way. My earliest memory, I was telling Mom, was a very angry preacher who was smashing records, like LPs. I remember that.
I don't remember that, but it must have been a visiting preacher.
It was a visiting preacher, definitely, because he wasn't.
But I would say that University Heights was a little more educated because any professors from the university who were Church of Christ of that brand would go there. But at Westview, they were like older, and if you could be any more conservative, even more so, but not as educated.
No, yeah, they took that poverty kind of thing kind of serious.
What really bothered me was when we moved back to Tennessee after we'd been in Texas for me to get my master's, Pete just kind of announced that we weren't going to go to University Heights anymore. We were going to start going to Westview. And I didn't want to go there because the people weren't as educated as we were.
Yeah.
No windows in that church.
No windows in those churches.
Cannot see God's creation.
It's too showy.
Yeah. Only we'd had the wedding in the church instead of out here. And
God's, the showiness of God's nature.
And the showiness of God's nature. So, all right, your earliest memory of Pete was at church?
No, I don't think it was at church. He took me outside. The church really condoned whipping kids, too. Because I got taken outside once at University Heights and brought back in teacher was like, okay, I guess you'll be quiet now. I was like, yeah, I don't want that to happen again. That kind of sucked.
Tell me about that.
He would taunt you with his belt. He wouldn't just beat you with his belt. He would snap it together. He would like,
I remember this.
Yeah, he would do that before he did it. So it's not like, hey, I'm going to punish you. Like, he's like, hey, I'm, he enjoyed that shit.
So Mom, how did the snapping of the belt when you heard it? Because you were just nodding in agreement, like, "Oh yes, he did that." What was your internal monologue whenever you heard that?
I don't know. I guess I just thought he was a bully.
Are you pro or anti beating kids?
I think a well placed smack to the bottom every once in a while is fine, but not beating them with a belt or with a house slipper.
Don't hit them with the house slipper, or do?
Once David had a bad cold and he wouldn't take any cough. We couldn't get him to take cough syrup. So Pete spanked him with the house slipper and tried to force the cough syrup down his throat.
He ended up pouring it on my head and smacking me across the face. I remember that.
I don't remember that
part. Oh, he sure did. He dumped that shit on my head.
But I remember I remember the next night giving you a bath and seeing the imprint, a bruise of the slipper on your butt.
Yep.
It's not a smack. That's a beat. That's a slipper beaten.
And I came very close to taking Daniel, who was a nursing baby, and going to my parents' house.
Yeah, I'd have been about three, I guess. Yeah. Remember, because I remember it being in that bathroom, and that bathroom before you redid it was New York subway in the 19 or hospital, like the tile and everything. It was like a teal blue or something like that. And it just had a certain look to it. And I remember I remember in the dark, it was a certain way in the dark. Cause that's when, I just remember that was, that dude could yell. It just seemed, or you remember it as that, but anyway.
It seems like I remember him just like yelling through the house.
I honestly don't remember so much yelling as just the way he acted, and his tone of voice was like he was bullying. It was the way
belittling. He was constantly,
and the way he used his words.
David, we're gonna get back to you in a minute, but we had a door in the we had a door in the house in the bathroom that had a hole in it.
I remember that.
And there was a poster over it. It was, what was it, Bob's
E.T.
It was also that or Bob's Roadside Roadkill. You remember that poster?
That was up there too. Yeah.
So how did the hole wind up in the door?
Tell you that one.
Go ahead. Let's tag team it.
Let's hear mom here.
Okay. Well, I was in the hospital and had just had you, Joseph. It was Sunday night, or maybe it was Monday. Pete put David on the phone, and David was just kind of saying hi, and he said, "Dad broke the door." And I think my blood pressure went up, and I was like, "What?" And I don't remember now what he said, but Pete took the phone and he was like, "Oh, we had a little accident." And I got really nervous, and I'm thinking, I need to go home and take care of my child, and I got to find out what's happening.
David, why was there a hole in the door?
Pete asked me how many times Daniel had peed in his pants. And so, because I was like six, and I didn't keep a tally of that sort of thing. So I guessed, and I was like, I don't know, two or three times. And he goes, and he beat the bathroom door with his hand. And then he collapsed on the floor and curled up in the fetal position and rolled around on the floor. I remember him doing that then first. He did that there before the karate tournament. Hmm. He did. He rolled in the hallway, that little, where the back door came in, the old house on Academy. The back door there, it was in that little bitty hallway. Yeah, he did it there, right in front of the back door.
Now, someone shit on the floor at one point.
Oh, who knows?
I thought there was a story about Daniel shitting on the floor next to the toilet.
It might have been then. It could have been then. And
then a hole got kicked in the door.
He sure walloped it.
Mm.
Showed that door.
So, all right, let's go back to your earliest memories. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you remember.
Just not a dude I wanted to be around, but at the same time I wanted to be around him because he was still my dad.
Yeah, I had the same feelings.
Because when he wasn't like being a complete asshole, he smelled nice when he got off work, because he smelled like wintergreen alcohol, because he worked at Swan for a while.
Smelled like wintergreen alcohol?
Yeah, because he used to work at that place that processed it. Yeah, so but he always come home smelling like wintergreen. And it was, it wasn't like a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was just strong. I don't really remember instances of waiting for him to come home. I just remember him coming home like, you know what I mean?
So being older than I was, so you're six when I'm born. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I'm six, you're 12, which is actually my daughter's age.
Yeah.
How, in that time from your earliest memories to being an adolescent, did Pete change? Did his behavior change? His attitude change? Because there was a lot going on. When I was five, they got divorced. And so, he apparently adopted a new persona. He was some sort of urban cowboy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bought a Ford Bronco.
Mm-hmm.
wore a bunch of cowboy hats, cowboy boots.
Some tacky cowboy clothing.
Yep. And so I'm just wondering what you remember about that transition or sort of how he changed as a person. Because that, because let's see, by the time I started to actually be able to remember stuff, I was 5. You would have been 11 when they got divorced. Mm-hmm. That would be when I remember that day they said they were getting divorced. I came in and you were upset and you were on the, you were on your bed crying. And
I told you why I was upset, you. Right?
I don't remember it.
Why I was upset?
Yeah.
Because the church was so against it. And I was raised in that church. It scared me to death.
What?
They disfellowshipped him, which I think is hilarious. It's horrible. It's so petty. But that's what they ended up doing to him.
What did you, what was going through your head? Why were you afraid of the church?
I don't know. I wasn't afraid of the church. I just, I don't know. It's just because that's what I was raised in. That's what I guess that's just what I, my kid had believed at the time, was that shit was real. As far as, you know, what the permanence of divorce means.
That sounds pretty traumatizing for a child. That does not sound like a positive Christian environment.
No, not at all.
Some might say the Church of Christ might be the Church of the Antichrist.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I think it certainly tolerates domestic abuse for the sake of keeping a marriage together.
And not all marriages are worth keeping.
That's true.
Very true. Yep.
So, David, tell me about karate.
All right, what do you want to know about it?
When did you start doing karate?
I would have been in second grade, so however old I was then. So, like, what, 7, 8 years old?
Yeah, something like that. So when did Pete start doing karate with you when you started?
Yeah, yep.
How did you progress in your karate career? Tell me about the highs and the lows.
So when we were in Texas, we were there for 2 years, and the progress as far as like your rank was slow. They weren't going to give a kid a black belt. They took those a little more seriously. When we moved here to Tennessee, there was like kids that were getting, you know, they were black belts. They were like 5 years old, you know, and that was just a foreign thing to us. So they kind of took that seriously. So I only went up 4 belts, but I was good enough to where that I would compete in tournaments.
How did Pete progress in his karate career?
Pete was very awkward to watch do karate.
What was his belt?
I don't remember I think he might have got up to gold, which would have been the second belt. Maybe green, which would have been the fourth belt, but that's what I got to was green. So I don't remember. You already told the story about him falling down and
yeah.
You know what happened? You know what the backlash of that was?
No.
We had a certain uniform that we wore to
Well, let's back up just in case somebody hasn't listened to that. Do you want to give your version of events?
Oh yeah, sure. So we were at a karate tournament and there's a lot of different, basically they're set up in like convention centers or high school gymnasiums or things like that, big open area, big places with big open floor spaces, and they make rings out of tape on the floor. They mark, and you have like a, that's where you do your form or your fighting anyway, and people crowd around them. Well, Pete was in the ring with somebody doing a fight, and this person, you're not supposed to contact the face in this form of fighting. So I don't know if anybody touched his nose or got close to it or whatever, but he dropped to the floor like the guy and feigned injury, like the guy broke his nose or something like that, and he was rolling around the floor. And at first I was like, oh, you know, hey, Dad, what's? And then I was like, and I realized what was going on. I looked around to make sure nobody saw me, and I like backed up and did the Homer Simpson through the bush thing, you know. But what happened after that was we had the special uniform. It was a short sleeved gi. It was blue, and we had like on the back was the logo of the dojo embroidered. It was kind of fancy. I've still got mine. And it was for people that went to tournaments, all right? And it was what we wore and how we represented the dojo. So he wasn't allowed to wear his anymore.
He got
it taken away.
He got the embroidered bead taken away.
He got the embroidered, and the only way I know that is because the guy that ran the studio brought it up in a class about how if anybody does that, you won't be able to do certain things. And I was like, after that, he was never wearing it again.
I'm just taking a moment to envision one grown man talking to another grown man saying, because you rolled around on the floor pretending to be injured, you can no longer wear the sleeveless gi. And I just imagine Pete, like, in his head, like, no, I will never be Bloodsport.
We also, like, when we first started, the thing they told us was if we were ever in a fight with anybody, we were supposed to tell our karate instructors. The reason being, they didn't want, if we got in a fight with somebody, they didn't want somebody saying, hey, this kid that takes karate at your school came up and kicked my kid's ass, you know. So if anything like that happened, we were supposed to tell them. So that actually did happen, where I got into, like, a tussle on, like a playground tussle, you know, how those happen. I got in a fight on the, you know, playground, and I told him, and Pete, like, had to one-up me, like, yeah, this guy at work came up to me and said something to me, and I crescent kicked him to the nose, but I didn't hit him. I was like, you can't get your foot above your knee. What are you talking about? And it's awkward when you do. But he told another adult that after I told him, and I'm sure the other adult was like,
okay,
I'm sure you absolutely didn't do that, sir. I'm sure that never happened at all. That's a weird thing to say. Your son's...
Sir, I don't believe your principal...
Sorry for your son, kind of.
I don't believe your principal will be calling up the dojo anytime soon.
Yeah.
All right. So you were good at karate.
I guess, yeah.
You had some big trophies.
I did, yeah.
Bigger than you.
Bigger than me, yeah. Still bigger than me.
Do you still have those?
Absolutely not. No.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
But you still have the gi.
I have that one, the one blue gi, yeah.
So, other than pretending to be injured, what was Pete's performance like as a karate kid?
Rigid and awkward. It was very painful to watch.
I seem to remember this from being a kid and watching the practices.
Did you ever see him do his line dancing when he did the country stuff?
I remember he would record the...
Absolutely, yeah. We record episodes with him on it.
Because it was at the White Horse Saloon,
yep.
And it came on CMT.
Uh-huh.
Was it something before it was CMT?
That was CMT was the original name, I think. You had TNT or TNN and CMT.
So it would come on CMT or TNN, and he would record it, mm-hmm. and then he would watch it when we came over. And
yeah.
I remember I was always like, yeah, he looked... super uncomfortable.
Yeah, very rigid and like, I'm dancing right now. I'm going to turn left now, except not on time. Whoops, I tripped. It was always very cold and awkward, yeah. And he did like stuff in karate the same way. It was like, there's a move now, and there's a move now, and there's a move now. And it just like, I'm going to do karate. Yes, I am. Very determined, but very bad. You know what I mean? Mom wants to talk to you.
Amazed that he started dancing after he was so much against it when he was in the Church of Christ.
Yeah, but the Church of Christ didn't like that dancing.
But after we divorced, then he went on his wild side and became a Texan and a cowboy and a dancer.
As a native Texan, that was always an insult to me.
That's right. You were born in Texas.
Yeah, I was born in Texas.
Let's talk about this real quick. So I asked David. He didn't have much insight, or maybe we're going to get to that in a minute. But so tell me about Pete pre-marriage and then after divorce, because he definitely went through like a personality shift.
I'd really like to hear pre-marriage.
Yeah. Was he a nerd?
Yeah.
You think so?
I know. Like, I think looking back at him and like seeing who he was with in high school, like seeing the people he went to high school with, you know what I mean? Did you remember them when we went to his high school reunion?
I remember that. I remember looking at his yearbook, and there was the Young Gentlemen's Club, which I thought, well, some male teacher felt for these boys that maybe needed a little culture or teaching in their life from another man, and maybe because they didn't have it at home. And so it was an attempt to bring a father figure into their lives and teach them a little something. And I felt that was kind of, I don't know, sad for him.
So he was in something like that?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's silly. Or that's what it is. Okay.
He worked at the library.
That's right. MTSU's library, right?
Yeah.
That's where you met him.
And,
right?
Yeah, I don't know. He worked hard. He majored in music, and every time he played the trombone, and they had what was called the jury, and you had to perform, usually with a piano accompaniment, and he would not pass his juries. It was so hard, and he wanted to be a band director. And at one point, he changed his major to English, and I guess after a semester, he changed back to band or teaching music or whatever. And so anyway, that was something that he did. So he never finished because he couldn't make up his mind what he was going to major in.
Oh, I thought it was because it was a surprise baby boy. He still had the opportunity.
He had every opportunity to go back and finish, and he never did.
Okay. I remember him playing trombone because he'd always have to go, like, leak it in the toilet because so much spit would get in there.
True.
And he would always spit on the floor. He would always do that in the room before it was finished, my bedroom.
Yeah.
Back when it was like particle board and, like, 2x4s, he would spit on the floor and keep playing.
Well, that's nasty.
Isn't it, though? Things you remember.
He had an album that the MTSU band had done. They had mm-hmm. recorded. And he would play that. And I guess he got depressed or he felt like he was missing out on continuing that. And I felt like he blamed me, that it was my fault.
From band dork to your husband, what was he like as a husband? In however you want to describe it.
Bossy, had high expectations.
Elaborate on that. What kind of expectations?
Something that just sticks out to me is that, and this was years later, he was like reminiscing, and he said that when we first moved in, maybe it was just months after. Anyway, when we first moved in our apartment, you didn't do anything, and I'd come home and there were still moving boxes all over the place. And I don't think I responded because I felt like it was pointless, but his reality or his truth wasn't the reality because I had worked my tail end off turning that apartment into a home. And I even practically crawled out the windows to wash the outside of the windows. Our apartment was on the second floor. But I worked hard in there, and he didn't seem to see that or remember that.
Or care.
Or care. True. He is a chance for him to be the victim.
So give me an idea of events that led up to you ultimately deciding that you needed to divorce this man.
Well, he just always spent money like there was no tomorrow, and he would order things, and one time he priced a whole house water filtration system, and the man
from the... I would just like to say nobody needs one of these.
He had one at his new house.
Oh yeah, he did. But
he had it, by God, he ended up getting it.
You do not need a water softener or a whole house filtration system. The water that comes from your municipal water supply, unless you are in Flint, Michigan, or apparently Jackson, Mississippi, your water's just fine. But sorry, go ahead.
So one day the fellow from the store that sold those units called, and I took the call. And he said he was, you know, from whatever store, and he was calling with a quote on the unit that Mr. Love had ordered. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And I said, "And how much is this?" And, of course, this was the day before calculators, and I could hear him punching the numbers in the adding machine and pulling the lever, and I could hear the return. It was almost like the cha-ching. And he gave me the total, and I said, "Well, Mrs. Love doesn't approve, and we're not going to get this." And so I put an end to that purchase.
I remember a few purchases that he made leading up to the divorce. Do you remember anything specific about those?
Well, I remember that he was always trading cars, and he would always be upside down in a car or underwater and trading them in and just adding debt on top of debt.
I remember there was a mulching machine or something that he bought.
He bought a chipper shredder. He had been in a work accident where one of his fingers was crushed. And he was on workman's comp, and he was off work for about a month. And then I was in a wreck, And when I got my settlement, we agreed on it, but he bought a rear tine tiller, and he bought every, attachment that it would have to go with it, all with my money. And then he decided later that we needed a chipper shredder. And I am pretty sure that I told him, I don't remember now. Maybe he had to sell it after the divorce. But that was one thing that he bought that we sure didn't need.
I remember you one time blamed a computer purchase on your divorce. Is that accurate?
That I did it? No.
No, that he bought it.
He said that he bought the computer because I was in graduate school, and he bought it for me to do my work on. But when he bought it, he said he was buying it so that he could work on a novel.
I bet that it was going to be a showstopper. It was the chart topper. It was the bestseller. It was the, oh man, he did. He wrote a novel. He sure did.
Now, someone in your family is a published writer and someone else is not. What kind of writer was Pete?
Well, he wasn't very good.
If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all, except
he did write a nice little article about being a paramedic for the Highlights Children's Magazine that he got published.
Foreshadowing.
But
that was terrible.
That's the, as far as I can remember, the extent of his writing when we were married. And then, I'm not sure how long after that he started writing, but I remember that, I guess you guys gave me a copy of his book, and it was just weird, and there was something in there about the character looking at his daughter's adolescent body, which totally creeped me out.
So you actually read that part. I never got that far into it. I didn't get past like the first two pages.
Yeah, I read the whole book just for the experience.
Sure.
Mom also read it, I think, for the experience.
What about Hummer Fleck?
Fuck no.
I didn't think so.
It was terrible. It was just not a good book. And it was creepy. And he's not a good writer. And Highlights for Children does not count, ever. Even the staff writers at Highlights, they all use pseudonyms because it doesn't count. So then after the divorce and you no longer live together, what happened to that man?
I honestly don't know.
Well, what did you see? What did he become? How did he change?
Well, I tried not to have anything to do with him to see how he changed. I told you the other day that he had this knack for calling at dinner time to complain about something. And he would berate me, or he would say things, and I would just get so nervous I couldn't think of how to respond. And David, if I may share this, your psychologist called one day to check on you, and then she asked me how I was doing. And I said, well, my ex-husband keeps calling, and he just goes on and on and on about stuff, and I don't know what to say. And she gave me some good advice and said, think about things that he has said, if he has a pattern of saying it, and write down what you want to say to him, and so that you'll have it ready, or you'll have it rehearsed. And then she said, also, if he starts in on things, just tell him, I'm not going to talk about this. And if you continue, I'm going to hang up. And I took her advice. And when he would call and be ugly, that's what I would do. So that helped me a lot.
Well, what would he call and berate you about or complain about?
Taxes once.
Taxes.
I remember taxes. He got into this real bad thing about taxes one year. I don't know exactly what it was. I just remember hearing him on the answering machine, will you please let me talk to my children? And we're getting on the phone, and he's like, hey. And I was like, I'm on the phone. I've heard everything. Do you think I know what's going on. What do you want me to do? Like, I'm, you know.
Well, the thing was, I had custody of all three of you, of course. And I was supposed to be able to claim, I guess, all of you dependents.
He wanted to do something weird.
And he wanted to claim two of you or something.
Yeah, because he was, yeah.
And your insurance was weird because I would have to save all of our receipts and send it in and get the reimbursement. But yeah, the taxes. And one year he got audited. And I guess he just thought that I was getting more money than I should have gotten.
For child support payments for three adolescent boys.
It was a little over $500 a month.
Which is a steal in today's dollars.
Yes, but it was 51% of his, or 41% of his income.
Well, that's why he lived in a trailer.
I suppose it was.
You know how big, everything about that man was a disappointment. We went to go meet his real father and brother. That was a disappointment. When he went to go show us his trailer, that was a disappointment. We pull in that neighborhood and there was that clubhouse. I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then we get to, and then we like round a corner. It's double wide. I'm like, oh, a double wide. Okay, great. We move it into, a shitty single wide. When we finally got to his place, it was awful. I was like, well, I guess I shouldn't have got my hopes up because it was Pete. That was the one lesson I learned from him is be disappointed always. Don't be surprised how bad you're disappointed by this man constantly.
So did you not think it was strange that he suddenly was taking us to like country music concerts and like driving a Bronco and wearing like cowboy stuff?
We're having a high school graduate as a roommate in his first apartment when he moved out. That was pretty weird.
I didn't know about that.
You didn't know about that?
No.
She was like 18. Yeah, it was like some runaway, basically.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
When we were first married, he had some Western-style clothing, so it didn't really, I didn't really think anything of it. Like I said, I was more surprised and shocked about the dancing.
Let me ask you this. When you met the man, were you like, that man is a cowboy?
No.
There's a good reason for that.
Yeah, because he was not. His whole persona after that became, I'm a Texan. Let's go back to what you were saying about being disappointed. You were disappointed in, what was the first thing you said?
Oh, like meeting his real...
Boy. Do you remember when that was?
When that was?
Yeah.
Y'all were still together. So I would have been... Because y'all went... You went with us.
Oh, to meet his father?
Joe and the other dude. Yeah.
George. What happened was we had bought a washing machine and he had gotten a loan at like this city loan company. And he went up one day to pay on the loan. And of course, his real name is George. And so when they were looking, they happened to find George W. Love. And it may have even had his middle name was Washington. But Pete was like, that's my father. And anyway, he managed to get, of course, this was a long time ago, but he managed to get his phone number and he contacted him. And so they got in touch after that.
And so I don't remember that. You came with us to meet his father and half-brother?
Yes, we went to Franklin and they were living in the way I got the impression was it was a house that had been cut into a duplex.
Yeah.
And they shared a bathroom with the other tenants. And the brother, Pete's brother, was just...
Half-brother or brother?
Half-brother. His father had paid for him to have a small business license to repair small engines, but he just wanted to work at a nursing home running the floor polisher. So I thought, this is a really get-up-and-go family. And they don't care. But then they took us, or at least the brother did. He was really into Civil War history. Mm-hmm. And using a metal detector,
yeah.
And he took us to an old a Civil War house that's like a historic site and told us everything about it. And I thought if he presented himself better, he could be, a docent at a museum and teach people about this. I mean, he did know that stuff.
Is that why we wound up getting a metal detector?
He gave us one.
Yes, the Grandpa Love got you a metal detector and a little mini bike.
You got this mini bike, yeah. That thing was fun.
And a
go-kart?
Go-kart.
What was your impression of George Washington Love?
I thought he was a nice man.
I really remember very little about this except for the tobacco spit Mountain Dews.
Now, okay, let me. I swear I remember this. This is kind of off the subject. He was vaping before vaping was a thing. He had an oxygen canister and he smoked a lot, right? And but he was on oxygen. And we saw him at this one place, okay? He had, in this oxygen thing, he had these little canisters. They looked like batteries, but they had the Camel logo on them, I swear to you. And he plugged it in this thing and twisted it, and he would actually, like, inhale. And I don't know if it vaporized or what, but he was, I swear he was getting nicotine that way.
Well, I would imagine that would have been an accessory to avoid people smoking with oxygen.
I think that would be it, because Grandma Joanne lived in that apartment where somebody lit up a cigarette and blew themselves up.
That's right.
And called me up and guilted me for not watching the news, basically.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Real good about guilt trips.
She could, yeah.
So tell me what else you remember about that meeting your biological grandfather.
I didn't really care after that.
In what way?
I met him and I was just unimpressed. I didn't care. After I opened up the refrigerator, I was like, they don't give a shit about anything.
I believe we also came back from there with hot pink, like scooter, like just a push scooter that you stood on. Definitely was from the 80s.
Possibly.
Or something like that. Had white rubber tires that were flat.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah. So we got a moped out of it. We got a moped and a go-kart and a metal detector and a pink scooter out of it. So that was pretty cool.
The moped was cool. I drove the hell out of the thing. You couldn't kill it.
No. What was that? It was
Suzuki.
It was a Suzuki. I always thought it was a Honda.
It was a Suzuki two-stroke.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then that actually was, I feel like that gift was the precursor to Mom's biker phase when she bought that Honda Shadow.
The Honda Nighthawk 250.
Honda Nighthawk 250.
The drop doggies.
It's funny because you took the motorcycle course and you learned how to ride motorcycle. And you rode your motorcycle a lot, and now you have no idea how to ride a motorcycle.
That would be true. If you don't practice, you forget.
I could ride a motorcycle for at least 100 feet. That's probably a guarantee.
You know what's funny is when you married Mark, he had that little Honda 50, that little tiny Honda dirt bike. I had never ridden a motorcycle before, never a bike with a clutch or anything like that. And man, that thing was easy to ride.
Like a duck to water?
I just knew how they worked, right? Clutch on the left and then you shift like down and all that. Oh, it was just intuitive. Yeah. Like just click, 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 just hauling ass in your vacant lot on that little Honda 50. God, that was fun.
I bet that was fun.
I was a 20-year-old man on a tiny, tiny dirt bike. It was awesome. So David, tell me more.
Okay.
You were unimpressed by the George Washington Love, and what was his brother's name?
Joe
Love. The other Joe Love.
Yep.
So, Mom, where was Pete from originally? Where did he grow up?
Mount Pleasant
in Maury County, Tennessee.
And that he lived with his grandmother
and grandfather for a little bit.
Yeah, grandmother and grandfather until the grandfather died, and his grandmother had a nervous breakdown.
What do you call that now? What's the DSM correct?
Probably a nervous breakdown. I do remember Grandma Joanne saying something about her father dying. He had cancer. He had bone cancer. Is that right?
Yeah, spine.
In his spine. And it had, well, something had happened. It had, I guess, gone into his, it had metastasized or it had spread and it was in his legs. And his bones basically were growing these like calcium deposits all over them and he couldn't get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded miserable. As you got older and you became, I guess, more aware of Pete as a person, did you ever feel close to him?
No. If anything, my interaction with him was just survival mode. I wanted to minimize my interactions with him, make sure any interactions I had like caused him the least stress possible, and just again see him as little as possible. When he had that 24 on and 48 off, I loved when he was gone at work. That was like the best time in the world. You know what I mean? I just didn't want to be around him.
What was discipline like for you? Because I got a very limited experience with that.
He would just angry hit. You know, he would punish by spanking with whatever was close or hitting with whatever was close, and he would always be very angry when he did it. He never let himself calm down. I remember one time I was turning 9 and we were living in Texas and he wanted to give me a birthday spanking with the same paddle they used to beat me with the normal time. And I was like, no, you're not getting anywhere near me with that. I was like, haha, no. He got so mad he ended up beating me with it. You know, not like he normally did.
Let me beat you with this paddle for fun. Oh,
what do you mean you don't want to get beat by that paddle?
Fuck no. You don't want to get beat with the paddle? That's a paddling.
That's a paddling. The things you remember.
Mom did... Do you remember this paddle?
Oh, yes. But I can't imagine that he would bother to take it with him to Texas. But anyway, he might have.
He did.
He was in a music fraternity.
But he was not on that paddle at all. I read every name
on
the
But I think
back.
That was the older students that passed you to let you in there. I think
he stole the paddle.
It makes for a better story.
If he stole the paddle.
If the sad man steals the paddle to pretend like he was part of the in group.
We're weaving the web.
We're trying to build a narrative.
He always had it, but that was the thing. It's like I just never noticed his name on the back.
I guess if he's just a giant piece of shit, we don't really need to embellish how big of a sad piece of shit he is.
That's true.
It's enough that he is one.
So you got beat with a fraternity battle.
Fraternity battle, yeah.
Mom, do you remember what fraternity he was in?
I think it was Phi Mu Alpha.
That sounds right.
Anyway, yeah. He was in a fraternity, yeah. And he kept the paddle, and then he beat you with it. Yeah. How often was that?
I don't remember, I didn't keep a log, but, you know, whenever I get in trouble, it was...
I don't think Daniel ever got hit with the paddle, did he?
I can just see little David with a little, one of those little bitty notebooks and a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4...
It was a multitude of times. I don't think Daniel ever got hit with the paddle.
Did Daniel ever get hit with anything?
I don't think so. I do remember asking Pete to help Daniel with his spelling words, and all he would do is send him to his room and say, study. And there was another time when two of you were getting into a little fight, and I was making biscuits, and I was up to my elbows in flour, and I said, Pete, would you please take care of that? And all he did was yell at y'all from his chair. He wouldn't get up.
That sums it up.
Oh, and then, you know, he thought he was a preacher, too. Like, in the Church of Christ, any man could get up and preach.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Go ahead.
Okay. So sometimes, especially on Sunday nights or Wednesday nights, one of the men from the congregation would preach instead of the preacher. And they saw it as an opportunity to just practice and hone their skills. But he would sit. I remember him sitting in the living room at the house on Academy Street with the television on, the police scanner on, and his Bible in his lap, and of course writing it by hand, and trying to write a sermon. And I have to have total silence to work, and I just didn't know how he could write and do anything with, you know, with all that noise going on, and then his sermons weren't very good at all.
He wrote a real riveting sermon. I remember exactly what the subject matter was. He wrote a sermon about, so if you missed the Lord's Supper during the service and you came back, was it Sunday night? If you came back Sunday night, you'd raise your hand to receive the Lord's Supper. And his whole thing was about how important it was to raise your hand for the Lord's Supper. You can't just put your hand up like this. You're going to raise your hand up for the Lord's Supper. And I was like, you're talking about arm height to the glory of our Lord, I guess. I remember it specifically because he was up there. And I think I remember because he got a pit stain because he raises he raised his arm up above his head. And I was like, oh, look, a pit stain. He's making a really bad point. He's making a really, really dumb argument about something that nobody cares about. Because they didn't move enough communion wafers that week or something. You need you to, you know, you raise that hand up.
You're going to go stale. This body of Christ has an expiration date. Mom, do you remember any of the sermons?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
You can't see it. You can't see it at home, but she gave me a very just sad, oh, yes, I do remember. But also kind of a slightly deviant yes, like, oh, boy, do I.
Okay. So one time we went back to his home church in Mount Pleasant, and he preached on Sunday night, and we took his grandmother with us. So he was using the King James version of the Bible. And let me just say that the Church of Christ doesn't necessarily use that. And they certainly don't say it's the only Bible you can use. But back in the late 70s, it was one of the few translations. So there is a story in the book of 1 Kings where a prophet tells King Ahab, who was a terrible king, that the Lord was going to take away like all his children, grandchildren, his posterity. And in the King James Version, it says, I will cut off from Ahab he that pisseth against the wall. That's the way it said, or that's the way the Hebrew rendered a man, a human being, a man, a male. He that pisseth against the wall. And apparently in King James English, piss wasn't crude. But he kept saying that. I guess the point was to be obedient so that you could, keep living. But I was so embarrassed because I thought, he keeps saying that. It was awful.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why you don't use the King James Version.
So between like...
True.
Pissing a... Okay, go ahead.
What's your favorite version of the Bible?
My favorite version? Well, I guess it would be the New Revised Standard, because that's what I use. And it addresses men and women as brothers and sisters and doesn't just talk to the men.
Yeah, interesting.
That is interesting. And that's also a terrible sermon.
Yes, it is.
I've also already forgotten what... I just know that Ahab was a terrible king. Didn't they write a song about Ahab?
Ahab the Arab.
What?
By Charles Stevens. Ray Charles? Ray Stevens. Ray Stevens.
Ray Charles? Was it Ray Charles? Yeah. You remember that old Ray Charles hit? Ahab the Arab?
Have you ever heard of a woman being called a Jezebel? Okay, Jezebel was Ahab's wife, and she was wicked and evil also.
Wicked and evil, like days of our lives, wicked and evil?
No, but anyway, it kind of shows you, I guess if you're a Bible scholar, it's not an obscure story, but I would say for your average churchgoer, it might be an obscure story, and he pulls it out to try to make a point about it.
Did he make a point about it?
That was many years ago. I doubt it. Let's put it that way. I doubt it.
I saw everybody that night after his sermon raising their hands up so high. So high. He impacted them on a deep level. You know what, Sally? Tonight, I almost missed communion. But you know what? Brother Love, his passion got me to raise my hand. I even showed my armpit sweat.
No, I don't think I remember that. I remember going to some weird church in the middle of the night for a night service, but there was someone playing guitar, and
that probably was St. Rose.
That it wasn't. I would have remembered St. Really? Rose. Yeah.
St. Rose looked different tonight, because we went to midnight mass there before.
No,
really late mass.
Yeah, no, there was no crucifix.
No crucifix. You didn't remember that.
It looked like, it looked like Grace Lutheran, but it wasn't. It was out in the country, and there was like a gravel parking lot. Anyone?
Do you remember a lot of singing? Were you very small?
Was it Advent?
No. His father invited us to a gospel singing at this church that had once been a tobacco barn. It had a piano that was very out of tune. But anyway, it was a beautiful wood on the inside, and I enjoyed it. But in the Church of Christ, they don't believe in... The only reason you would sing a religious song is to praise God. So I liked Amy Grant, but I couldn't tell anybody I liked her music because she was doing it as a performance.
So I'm now more confused about Church of Christ. They were just against music?
They were against you, basically. Anything that didn't glorify God, I think.
Well, if you're like Amy Grant performing and making money and profiting off it, that would not be the reason for singing religious music. Pete didn't like, he wouldn't sing at the singing because they were playing a piano and it was almost like it was for entertainment and not a worship service.
And we can't, as human beings, the last thing we need that God would want us to be is entertained or... anything like that. It's we need to be solemn and...
Well, or even be entertained with wholesome religious music.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not 4-4, if it makes you want to move your hips, if it's syncopated at all.
This sounds horrible. This sounds like the absolute worst version of Christianity.
I told you, it's like because they didn't have a sense of humor.
I found a book about the Church of Christ and like how it was formed, and I'll have to... look it up and send you a link so you can get it. Reviving the Ancient Faith, that's what it's called. I lent my copy to somebody and never got it back.
Didn't you say they're Calvinist, is like a part of the Calvinist movement?
No. Well, ultimately, but the people who actually started the church were Presbyterians.
Okay.
Which is a Calvinist group.
Right, right.
I did not mean to get off on a theological tangent.
So you're asking me all these questions about Pete. And something that happened over the years after the divorce was that I put all that behind me. because it was difficult to live through and I didn't want to think about it. And then when the stuff with Jesse came up, it's like it brought all that to my memory again, just remembering how bad it was. And so I was, you know, shocked, number one, that he had done that, because I'd be the first to say he was a terrible husband and a terrible father, but I never in a million years could I imagine that he would molest a child. But anyway, hearing about that just brought those old memories up. And but I have not, I don't want to say shoved them away, but I choose not to dwell on that stuff. So you're asking me questions that maybe I don't remember, or I don't have a good answer, because I don't think about that. I choose not to think about that part.
How are you able to compartmentalize it or push it back? Are you just really good at repressing your feelings and memories?
Well, that may be part of it, but I just choose to go forward and not focus on that. I wrote a short story about my life with him when we were first married, and my character is planning an escape to leave him, and which is something I really wanted to do and never acted on. But with everything in my life, I just choose to focus and remember the better, happier memories than the sad ones, because I get depressed enough and I need to focus on good things.
And I would like to say that the short story that you wrote is, I loved it. The first iteration that you sent me, I loved it. And I really enjoyed working on fleshing it out with you. And I think you are a very talented writer and you have a good feel for storytelling in general. And I got to say, I don't blame you for pushing it all back, because I imagine living through it day by day and then finally getting out of it, that's like a reward. That's your reward for putting up with it, is you don't ever have to think about it again.
Yeah.
I think the best punishment in the world is just every fragment of him being erased. That's why he's not in any pictures anymore. None of them, anything, I've erased him from all of them. I just won't have it.
Yeah, I burned the copies of his books that I had, and I burned all of his letters. And anytime that I find anything that has his name on it, I get rid of it. There was really no love lost there with me. And I think that I had enough other positive male figures in my life that I turned out for the better that he wasn't in my life much.
True for all of us. We all sought out those male influences. Stan, for me, was around him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I did want to get some backstory, because in the original, with this being a bonus episode, in the original three episodes, the first episode mostly was to build this sort of character idea about who this man was. And I think we're getting that, actually, with the more conservative, more fundamental Christianity aspect, the college aspect, the sort of the way that he was at karate, and sort of as a young father. And I'm wondering, David, if when, because I think you were the first person that Jesse called, is that right?
She said she had called you. I remember I called you after that, and your response was kind of funny.
I don't even remember what I said.
Well, are you surprised?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But I mean, it was shock, I think, for both of us, too.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, now that you say that, yeah, that sounds like something I would say. And I'll tell you why I probably said it. Because in the time that he married his third wife, the behavior and the actions that he had, like, around kids seemed more awkward or unnatural. And he had, Mom, we'll include you in on this as well. He got way more into the kids, like, lives than he ever was in ours, with the exception perhaps of David and the karate. And I don't know how we framed that when we were kids, but I think we kind of like joked about it, like, oh, Dad has a new family to be interested. Do you remember this?
No, I remember that Daniel's reaction was he called them intruders and invaders.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So what was, and the reason that I think it wound up not being surprising is because abusers have this tendency to like keep their victims close, and he fit that to a T by injecting himself into like deeply into their lives. Like he became like a soccer coach and a referee, and he was like always in their personal lives. Like he always like kept tabs on them and always knew what was going on, but also just like the way that he was, like they were, he always had them sit on his lap. And even grandma said something about this, because there was at one point, for some reason, he came over to the house with the girls. And
that was probably during my wedding stuff.
Yeah, I think that was it. And I think Laura was sitting on his lap. And grandma said something about it later, like, well, you know, those girls are too big to be sitting on that man's lap. And I was like, yep. They sure are. And I always thought it was creepy and odd. And then, like, you know, the stuff with the Olsen twins and all that, just it. So when she told me, I was like, well, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
It's like all the red flags became, you know, they became more red flags. It's like they finally lit on fire and became obvious. And hindsight's always 20/20.
Yeah. They weren't even, I guess the bad part is that we were naive. I don't know.
I just continue to tell myself that this is yours. We were kept out of that house. We were kept out of their lives. That was done on purpose. It was, and I believe it was all done on very purposely done.
He did call to fuss at me one time for saying that I was trying to keep you boys from like getting to know them or being close to them. And I said, well, if you all live together in one house, I guess it would be more important that you be close, or, you know, be like the Brady Bunch. But they're here and, you know, the other children are with you and they don't have to be all brother, sister, lovey-dovey. But he tried to blame that on me, that y'all weren't close to your step siblings.
That's because he was crazy.
So, yeah, to me, we were naive because I never saw them as red flags. I always just thought he was, like, becoming a weirder old man. But there was stuff when I was a kid. He would make comments about, like, I had a girlfriend in, like, fourth grade, and I pointed her out to him once because he picked us up from Case and Lane. And he was like, oh, she's cute. I was like, well, maybe a grown man shouldn't be talking about a fourth grade girl. Like,
there's this one time when we lived in Texas, it was me and this guy I was in class with, and I guess he had this crush on this girl named Tanya, and he'd always talk about how she was ugly and, you know, just stuff that boys say about girls they like but don't like, you know what I mean? It's teasing. And he like Tanya, you know, he'd always make fun of Tanya. Okay, so we were at the house one day in the garage, outside the garage, and there was a bell on like a bike or something like that. I think it was this stupid tricycle thing that Pete got. It was like a big adult tricycle.
Oh, I remember
with a bell on it.
Yep.
Joanne got it. Yeah. His mom got it. But anyway, it had a bell on it, and he was fixing it. And this kid goes, "What if instead of the bell it said Tanya's face is ugly? Tanya's face is ugly." And Pete got mad. Pete got so mad and yelled at the kid. You know what I think? I think that she's actually probably a very nice girl. And it probably means you probably like her. And he goes on this tirade about it. And I'm sitting there like, you should probably go home. This man just yelled at you about that shit. He normally just yells at me. He got mad about it. He would get mad if I, like, there was this girl that was at the, when we would go to the rescue squad all the time. There was a girl that was an ROTC that was also a volunteer there. He got mad at me and gave me the cold shoulder treatment because I wouldn't talk to her. It was weird.
What?
Yeah. I noticed all sorts of stuff like that. Like if I didn't like, yeah, he was like, it was odd.
You know, he also, I don't know, there was a girl that lived in, when they lived in those townhomes, there was a girl that lived nearby. Her name was Marie. And it was like Pete and Jesse's mom were like trying to set him up with this girl, and they would make her like come along with us, and like they kept like putting her, Marie and Daniel together, and Daniel was like, "This is, I don't like her." Do you remember the family reunion?
Yeah, I remember the family reunion. Yeah,
can you fill me in on that? Because all I remember is watching The Good Son in someone's living room.
I just remember the only thing I really remember about it was being at a park in a pavilion. I remember like a couple of kids that were my daughter's age coming up to me smoking. Again, another disappointment. Oh, interesting. A family reunion. We get to see what the side of the family's like again, and they're all bad.
Oh, look, some 13-year-old kids just smoking some Camels.
Smoking some Camels, yep. I wasn't impressed.
And then we went to someone's house after, I think.
Did we?
I think. And because you were hanging out with someone, you found a family member to actually hang out with.
Mm.
And I guess Pete was talking to say, anyway, we were basically like stuck in a living room, me and Daniel, with like, I think, another kid who didn't, I didn't have anywhere to go. I didn't know anybody. And I was just like, well, I guess we're watching whatever's on TV. And it was The Good Son.
Was that a, was
with
that?
Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood.
Oh, okay.
Where Macaulay Culkin's the evil kid.
Okay.
They throw the dummy off the bridge over the freeway.
Wow. That's pretty rough.
Yeah. Like I said, always being dragged around. No real plan for me when I was a kid. Just dragged around everywhere, just plopped in rooms, plopped on bleachers.
Oh, did I tell you what? Mm. He bragged about this. Do you remember when we went to Kmart or something like that and I got separated from him? And he always bragged about how he snuck up behind me and picked me up and carried me out of the store to another car and didn't let me know that it was him, to teach me like not to wander away from him anymore, because he thought, made me think I was getting kidnapped. He loved telling that story.
What?
To show about how, yeah, I remember him doing it.
What?
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was like 3 or 4.
Well, did you learn the lesson?
I learned the lesson.
Did a 3-year-old really learn a lesson that day?
Hell if I know. I just remember him always talking about it. He also liked to do this one karate move where he would come up behind me and grab my hair. And I had a certain series of moves that I would do to like counterattack it. But every time he did it, I wanted to break his wrist because I don't like having my hair pulled. And every time he would do it, he'd pull my hair, and I just hated that crap.
All it would have taken was one solid wrist snap.
I could have done it.
He never would have done it again.
Yep.
Why didn't you use your karate against him?
He's a lot bigger than I was.
Yeah, but his balls are just as sensitive as his ball is just as sensitive as anyone else.
His ball.
Oh yeah. The man only has one testicle.
It never dropped.
It's still up in there.
It's a scared turtle.
What a piece of shit.
Or, I started wondering after this thing with Jesse came out, that is that why he wanted to be a band director in high school?
He did spend a lot of time at schools, like preschools,
really did,
elementary schools, and then
high school when, yeah, I went and you went.
Yep. Always doing the CPR classes. I don't really know how to like tell this story, because it's not much of a story. But when I was a freshman in high school, I did public theater, and I was in this production of Babes in Toyland, and I did not sing. I am not a singer, but you know who is a singer? Country music superstar Chris Young. And he and I used to do public theater together. So he had a solo in this show. Anyway, that's also when I got my first girlfriend. She was in this show. Pete came to the show, and it was a Christmas show, obviously. And he recorded it on his VHS tape, or on his VHS camcorder. And he was like, I'm going to make a copy of this for your girlfriend. You can give it to her. And I was like, that sounds great. Thanks. And so he made one. And then at the end of it, he took a bunch of home movies of me as a kid and put them all on there, like at the end. And, you know, I was like 14, and I was like, oh, that's actually funny. Like, oh, look, I am. I'm a kid. That's cool. But then as I got older, I was like, I think he did that to like try to embarrass me, maybe? Or like he gave me a gift to give my girlfriend, who was 14 at the time.
He liked to talk to other people's girlfriends. When remember me talking about Spinoza?
Oh,
that was in front of a girlfriend. That mortified me.
All right. So
I had to bring him up.
The man was a colossal piece of shit,
and one of the history's greatest storytellers.
He beat you with a belt. Mm-hmm. They made the snapping noise. Mm-hmm. Mom's made the snapping. He beat you with the paddle. Mm-hmm. He beat me with his bare hand. I don't remember if he used the belt or not. I remember he would snap it at me. This didn't make it into the original podcast, but he was physically violent with his stepchildren. And obviously everything that we discussed, the sexual abuse in the second and third episodes of No Father's Better Than One. But this particular bit of Pete lore, it doesn't fit anywhere other than the fact that the man is a narcissist and he loves to lie and he loves to make himself out to be the hero. So I think this is a good way to end the bonus episode. We would be doing the podcast community a disservice if we didn't discuss Spinoza. So, Mom, did you know that your ex-husband Pete, did you know that he was a combat medic?
I did not know that.
You mean to tell me that when you were living in Texas and he was chasing down the infamous drug kingpin Spinoza, you had no idea that in fact every time he left the house he might not return
because he was getting into those hijinks.
Because he was high stakes as a medic hunting down the drug kingpin Spinoza. You had no idea?
I had no idea.
Does it sound like something that is real or something that's made up?
Totally made up.
Did he ever bring home his sniper rifle to clean it?
Never seen a sniper rifle.
Interesting.
Did he ever talk about hanging out of a helicopter with a sniper rifle?
Don't make me laugh. All of this came about much later on. I don't recall that he told tall tales like that when we were married. He did tell a lot of lies, but I don't recall hearing crazy stories like that until you guys told me about it years later.
Before we get into
probably something you blocked. Sorry.
It could be. Before we get into Spinoza.
Could be, no.
What do you think the reason would be for a man like Pete to just make up a bunch of shit?
Because he wants to seem important.
All right. Let's talk about Spinoza. Who is Spinoza? What's he doing? Is he dangerous? Is he a threat? Can he be stopped?
Yeah, probably.
Probably pretty easy to
stop him.
Yeah. Because he's not real.
Yeah, you just have to not think about him.
So what was the first iteration of the Spinoza? What is in our family, in among the Love brothers, there is a mythical
series of stories. Kingpin named Spinoza. That's all I got was his last name.
So that's the odds.
I think when he was in Texas and that he might have, the way I've pieced it together is like when we lived in Texas, he might have gone to a call in a rough neighborhood in Texas and they talked about drug activity and that ballooned into a drug activity with a known drug dealer to a drug kingpin that didn't want them in the neighborhood I remember him specifically telling a story about leaving a neighborhood and having a red sniper dot on the middle of his red cross on his ambulance. I remember, and then that morphed into when that happened and a Spinoza character, I think that's the first time Spinoza appeared, was doing something that he would always do, like some sort of weird Italian gesture that was obscene, but he would always get it wrong and he would always do it forced and like he did karate. Like, it was hard to explain the way he would do it.
He would take his fingers and scrape from his neck to his chin, like, ooh.
But he would do it really stupid.
Yeah.
Like, and not uncool.
And also, by the way, a drug kingpin from South or Central America would never make this.
Yeah, he wouldn't do that. And then it eventually, in front of a girlfriend, he decided to tell me one day that he was a combat medic and he had Spinoza in his sights, but his boss told him to stand down. Yeah.
So
that was a short version of the story. All I remember was just sitting there looking at him thinking, we were leaving.
So just to give a bit more context, he would tell these stories about being a medic And he often, so I think this, personally, I think this grew out of like how he would do these like CPR classes, or like, you know, he'd go to the schools and do these presentations, and he would show like the slides, like from these wrecks, where like, here's a man's brain in a motorcycle helmet. Don't ride motorcycles. Don't drive drunk, like all that stuff. And I think that morphed, like, he was always trying to like impart this wisdom, like this, you know, street smart wisdom, like, right? And I think that came like, we were in a bad neighborhood, and we were in a bad neighborhood run by drug lords. The drug lord's name was Spinoza. We were in a bad neighborhood run by the drug lord Spinoza, and as we were leaving, there was a red sight dot on the cross on the ambulance. And then I think it got progressively worse from there, because I do remember, I remember hearing this, like hearing the name a lot. Like, it came up a lot. And I never really cared, because it was never impressive.
Yeah.
It was never interesting.
Well, it's because you knew it was bullshit. Because everything, there was nothing valuable that came out of his mouth, just like nothing valuable came out of that house when he finally went to jail.
Yeah. So when he told you about, I think I need the extended version of the got him in my crosshairs. Because we have to see how this story ballooned from like, I was in a bad neighborhood, to I was in a neighborhood run by this drug lord Spinoza, to I'm in a helicopter with a sniper rifle as a paramedic.
It ballooned, but it ballooned in sporadic and awkward ways. It would only come up when it was a way of one-upping. Or in that case, when I was walking with my girlfriend, we were literally leaving his house, and he ran outside to tell us a story. Yeah. I was on a sidewalk standing there and just...
And he runs outside. Wait, guys.
Yeah, wait. Let me tell you this.
Hold
story.
On. Oh, was it, what was this like around the holidays?
Of course, it was near Christmas. So my face, his face illuminated by the janky Christmas lights.
Okay. So you've gone over to Pete's house for around Christmas to visit for Christmas.
Yeah.
And taking a girlfriend or a partner over to the house is serious because then she is exposed to all the bullshit that...
Basically, it's like, if you can deal with this, you can deal with anything.
Yeah. So, you've already done your visit.
Yeah.
And you have made your goodbye.
And like,
out the front door. And everyone on our family knows the feeling of making it out the front door and
absolutely
hitting that sidewalk.
Because
you're like, oh,
thank God,
we're done.
Go home.
And...
No more kitty cat. No offense to kitty cats, Mom, but...
Diamond.
That one time Diamond flew the plane at 9/11 and then came back here and started batting a tinfoil. He flew the plane. He did.
That cat did so much terrorism.
He did so much terrorism. That Diamond. That Diamond just a...
So you've made it out the front door. The door has closed. The storm door has closed. You're on the sidewalk, and all of a sudden you hear it whoosh open. The door flies open, and you think, oh, I must have forgotten my fucking fudge.
Yeah. Must have forgotten my fudge. That's overly sweet, disgusting Carla fudge.
Because they would chase you down, like, don't forget your fudge. We may, and I fucking hate fudge.
I left your fudge for a reason.
I hate fudge.
Uh-huh.
All right, anyway.
Yeah.
So he chases you down, and he says, David, my son, I must tell you.
Let me impart on you this story from my heroic days as a combat, you mean to tell the story like what? I don't remember. I just like bits and pieces of it. Like I said, the most confusing part was the fact that he came out and told the story.
Yeah, that's my favorite part, actually, the whole thing.
I just remember, like I said, I just remember sitting there just baffled, just confused. And we got in the car and like not a word was said about it. It was like, don't even pretend like that happened.
How old were you at the time?
Probably 19, 20.
And here's what I feel like happened. He was like, you left and he had just met like your, you know, 19 or 20 year old girlfriend. And he was like, oh my God, I didn't do my best to impress my son's girlfriend. I better chase them down and tell them about Spinoza.
Yeah, I think that's what happened.
He was like, holy shit, maybe she'll think I'm cool.
I even tried telling him later on, like I'm like, you know, it seems like your job would afford you enough stories to tell where you didn't have to make up shit.
You told him that?
Yeah, I told him that.
When did you tell him that?
We were on the phone. I don't remember. He called one day. He wanted to talk. I was sick of hearing him lie all the time.
That's impressive. I never said anything like that to him. One of my biggest regrets.
Yeah. Then it actually came from a good place. And you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was actually like,
dude, you don't have to do this.
This is embarrassing. You know what I mean? Because when I, you know, disappointment, a lot of embarrassment for the man.
Yeah.
In life.
What was his response? Did he have one?
No, he didn't really have one. No. Oh. Like, I was talking to my doctor a long time ago about, she kind of gave me the confidence to tell, because dad used to talk shit about mom all the time and I couldn't stand it. And so she said, here's what you should say to him. And I said that to him and he just looked straight through me. And he just kind of grinned and nodded his head. And I was like, that didn't connect.
What did you say?
I just told him that I didn't like him talking crap about mom.
Yeah.
Like, knock it off. And he just, you know, it just like I said, it didn't register.
My son is making noises.
Yeah,
weird.
He's making non-clucking noises.
I still don't know when he was a combat paramedic.
Oh, between the hours of 11 and 0 dark 30, when you were asleep and the rest of the world was asleep.
Because I was...
Because crime never rests. Neither does Spinoza.
All I could think of was like the Vietnam War, and it's like, well, that would have been impossible.
Oh, no. You're thinking of like a military combat medic. No.
This would have been a guy that would have been attached to paramedics to keep them safe during when they deployed in like a bad neighborhood or something. They don't exist. He invented the position.
Yeah.
I think there might be a combat medic. Okay, well, if you have a SWAT team, then like say that they're raiding the Branch Davidian complex, I guarantee there were combat medics there because they got shot.
Yeah, okay. Like a federal agency.
Agencies. Okay, that's where those people exist. They're actually what they would be is a paramedic with something, but they would also do special training to get that. Anyway, it doesn't matter because it wasn't him. He wasn't one.
So when he was a paramedic and he would go out in the ambulance, right, what he's saying is he was selected from the ambulance crews, the privately owned or run ambulance crews. He was selected to go into a helicopter with law enforcement. And somehow, as a paramedic, he was given a sniper rifle in the helicopter, and he had Spinoza in his sights. Again, how much did he make as a paramedic?
I really don't know.
It would have been...
not a whole lot.
At one time, let's see, in the 90s, he would have been making between 33 and 37,000 a year.
They take him from the ambulance to the helicopter and they give him a sniper rifle.
Well, the thing is, a combat medic wouldn't be armed.
But he said he had him in his sights.
He had him in his sights. Yeah. So obviously, you know, all the other snipers that were, they were busy, or they were just like, you know, we got to stand down because love is here.
I like how we need this medic right here in the helicopter. All right, great. We have all these trained...
For people that
trained soldiers.
They're definitely going to cry because they didn't get to do this.
Who's going to take the shot? I've got it. Give it to the fucking medic.
Give it to the medic. Yep.
This guy.
It's his time for glory. Medics don't get enough.
Yeah. Listen, being a sniper is hard enough. Sniping from a helicopter, nigh impossible.
It's not a platform you want to shoot from.
No. But also, if you are a paramedic working in an ambulance making $30,000 a year, you are arguably, you are not trained to do any of that.
No.
And that we would believe it is an insult to our intelligence.
That's what offends me most about people that lie to me, is the fact that they're insulting my intelligence, thinking I'll believe, especially the more outlandish stuff. Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't say that to a combat medic.
No, you wouldn't say that to a combat medic, especially if you had somebody as bored as Spinoza in his sights.
That's right.
I can't believe his boss told him to stand down.
Well, you know.
I mean, what was his rationale? I bet his boss was paid off.
His boss was paid off.
His boss was probably paid off.
He was part of the cartel.
Part of the cartel.
Plot twist, that helicopter paid for by drug money.
By drug money.
That's right.
Fueled by cocaine, pure cocaine.
I think we've covered all of our bases. He was just an absolute terrible piece of shit. Mom, is there anything you would like to add?
I can't say it.
Mom, the name of this podcast is Unfuck the Poor. You can say whatever you want.
Rot in prison and burn in hell.
You dirty piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's what she said. She said he's a dirty piece of shit.
Well, she wrote it.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah.
David, is there anything you would like to add or close out on? Anything you think we haven't covered in the three episodes plus this bonus episode, which I will be heavily cutting down to probably 45 minutes.
I don't blame you at all.
What are your thoughts about just everything?
He's in the right place. He's separated from society. He's being punished. My only hope is probably it's probably just a pipe dream, but that he has some sort of revelation or something like that, that he sees some sort of wrong in what he's done. That's really all I could ask for. Anything less than that, I mean, and I don't even want that for me. I don't want that for his victims. I just want that for him so he can actually maybe progress as a human. It's all I'd want for anybody that does horrible things, is like maybe not be horrible now.
Have some sort of self-realization.
Maybe.
Could become honest with yourself.
I don't think it's going to happen, but
I don't either. And my concern with prison is that it will just teach him like to insulate himself from reality more,
right?
Like kind of disassociate. What are your thoughts on if he survives prison, if he doesn't die in prison, what do you think reintegrating into society is going to look like for him when he's released in 13 years?
He's going to be a ward of the state, and I'll sign the only thing I'll do for him, the only finger I'll lift for him, is just to sign the paperwork to make it so.
Yeah, he does not have a good-looking future ahead of him.
No, he doesn't. They took everything he owned, all of his clothes. They threw all that stuff away.
Yep.
He was telling people, like, hey, take my clothes, put them here. And
no, nobody
helped.
Yeah,
I hate to say it, but nobody. I say they acted like vultures in the way that they picked everything clean.
Yeah.
You know, they made sure there wasn't enough trace of him left.
It's more like a Russian assassination.
More like, yeah, and they really got.
Mom, what do you think he'll be like as an old man released from prison? What I can't hear you. Did you say dirty old piece of shit? So, there's something about imagining Pete fishing stuff out of a toilet,
so he can write his letters.
That just makes me so happy. He's like a turd burglar. That about wraps it up for the bonus episode of No Father is Better Than One. This has been Unfuck the Poor. You can find us online at uftpultra.com. That's UFTP as in Unfuck the Poor, ultra.com for show notes, transcripts, and bonus material. Go to uftpultra.com. Find us on Instagram at Unfuck the Poor.